there have been a Messiah in this week's parsha. It's toward the very, very end of the parsha, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Perek Nun, Pasuk Yud Zayin. It says, "Vayit Yosef b'davro milov." That Yosef the Tzaddik cried when they spoke to him, when the Shlachim spoke to him. So what was the story? The Maaseh we all know. Shlachim, after Yaakov Avinu had passed away, they came back to Mitzrayim and they saw that Yosef was not treating them as he once did. Chazal tell us, and Rashi brings it down, that he wasn't inviting them to meals anymore. They used to be invited to every meal. Now the Shlachim were not being invited to Yosef HaTzadik's palace. Yosef HaTzadik had reasons for it. He was worried. La'alokha, the Maharam Mirotenberg would not allow his father to come to his shul, because there's a shaila, who should stand up for who? Do you stand up for your father if you're the Rebbe? Or does the father stand up for the Rebbe? So the Maharam Mirotenberg wouldn't allow his father to go to his shul so that the shaila would never come up. Shaila would never come up. In a similar vein, Reb Nelson Adler, after the Chassam Sofer turned 14, would not allow his father to visit the yeshiva anymore, to see the Chassam Sofer, because he felt that it would hinder his growth, wouldn't allow the Chassam Sofer to become as great as he became. Yosef HaTzadik was worried. Yehuda, Reuven, Yehuda was already professed to be the leader of Klal Yisrael by Yaakov Avinu. Lo yasor shevet miYehuda, said Yaakov. Reuven's the official Bechor. He's older than Yosef HaTzadik. Even though Yosef HaTzadik was the king, he still had an issue what to do with the Shvatim if you invite them over for meals. So he wasn't sure what to do. So he never invited them in, never gave them a reason. And the Shvatim assumed that the reason why was because he was upset that he had been sold. He had been upset all about it, and it was coming back now. That's what the assumption was. So by Yet Yosef and Abraham Elab, the Shvatim went to Yosef and they told him, listen, your father told us before he died, Yaakov Avinu said before he died, that you shouldn't hate the brothers for what they did. That the brothers shouldn't be punished for what they did, and you should treat them amicably. Yosef cried. Says to Rabbeinu Bachaya, take if she is skirulo aviv, as soon as they reminded him that their father had died, he cried for the fact that his father was dead. He loved his father so much, he had so much rachman for his father, he cried over the fact that he had lost his father. Now everybody else says the reason why he cried was a simpler reason. He couldn't believe the brothers suspected him. They were koshit b'ksher. They thought that I was hating them. They thought that the reason I didn't invite them was because I was upset about the sale. Chas v'shalom, that then I was thinking, he thought that. That's vayik. But here, says Rabbeinu Bachaya, it's because he was reminded of his father, he couldn't take it. V'nei achiv b'kshu mimenu mechila. His brothers asked for mechila. In a roundabout way, they asked Yosef to be mokel them for selling him down to Mitzrayim. V'lo beira kasev shemokelam. And the pasuk doesn't say explicitly. There is no pasuk that says the Shvatim said to Yosef, we're sorry, forgive us. There is no such pasuk. Kvar b'yaru Chazal, shchol mi shakotu lechaber. Chazal already said this, the Gemara in Yuma, anybody who sins against his friend, v'asa tshuva, he does tshuva, eino nimcha l'aylam atshei ratzeh chaber. You have no mechila, you are not forgiven, until you daven and you ask that person, I shouldn't say daven, you plead with that person that he should forgive you. You can daven all you want. You can ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the mercy that you want, but you are not forgiven until you go up to that friend and you say to him, please forgive me. If you don't do it, it doesn't work. Even though the pasuk says, and he consoled them. And he spoke to the hearts and he explained to them. Yosef said to them, Shvatim, don't worry. I know you're still my brothers and I still love you. Even though he said that, it appears that there was a ritzui, that Yosef HaTzadik had forgiven them, Yosef HaTzadik had done so. Says the Rebbeinu Bachaya, it's the only reason to my knowledge that says this. There is no medrash on this. Mikol makom l're'inu sheyazkir akosuv mechila b'Yosef. The pasuk does not say that he was mokel them. Velo sheyodim lehem sheyisafishim v'chatosom. And it doesn't say that he forgave their pesha and their chet, their, I guess you could say, their sin that they did on purpose and the sin they did by accident. V'im kein. And if so, the Rebbeinu Bachaya, meitzu b'onsham. They died with that punishment. They died without getting a mechila. Below mechilas Yosef, the efshur lischapar avonam rak mechilasam. And it's impossible to get a kapara for what they did without asking mechila. And as great as the shlatim were, they never asked it, they never got it. Says to Rabbeinu Bachai the scariest words, Valkein Hutzrach Onesh Lioso Kamus Lepakosu. Therefore, the punishment had to be hidden and sealed. To be used later on during the times of the ten martyrs, during Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, during Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, those that passed away, those that were killed by the Roman government, all of them that were killed was due to the fact that the Shlatim never asked the Mechila. And this doesn't only go by the nine, this is ten people altogether. In Shas, this is Reuven's fault as well. Reuven never asked for Mechila, even though he wasn't involved in the sale. And because Reuven never asked for Mechila, he's included in this. The Karvani Lomar, I say, Sheish Miza Remez Bakasun Mashanikfa Lashon. He says there were two sins that they did. He says there's a double Lashon over here. They said, forgive the Pesha Achicha and forgive the Pesha Avdei Elohei Avicha. That there were two things, and Yosef was Mocha on one of them, he wasn't Mocha on the other, and therefore it ends up being that a Kaddish Baruch will punish them later on in time. It's an unbelievable thing. Unbelievable. The Briskers say that there were two Dinim within the Mechila of Yosef, and even though Yosef was Marat to them for the Chelet Gavoa, meaning there's two things they sinned. They sinned against God by selling Yosef, and they sinned against Yosef. And the Yosef said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's part I can be Mochel, but my own part I can't be Mochel. It's as if Yosef HaTzadik was saying, he didn't say this out loud, but he's simply saying, this has to come back at some point in time. And it has to come back in some way, and something like this is going to happen. Even Yosef HaTzadik was blamed for not being mocheled on. Akiva ben Yosef, Rabbi Akiva, was because of Yosef's chelek in the sale that the Shapur Ramal, that he should have been mocheled on. Can you imagine this? For thousands of years, this chate was hanging on the heads of Klal Yisrael, and they were waiting for a time when people were going to die. Al Kiddush Hashem being martyred, but great men were going to die because of sin of the Shvatim. Now again, Rabbeinu Bachai is speaking almost 1,000 years after the Asar Rugi Malchus happened. Asar Rugi Malchus was a period of 130 years, where in between Yishmael Kohen Gadol was the first one to die, all the way till probably Chutzpitz and Meturgamon was the last one. Rabbi Kiva was right in the middle, all the others were right in the middle. Whoever was there, the 10 people that passed away during a period of about 120, 130 years, and for all that time, up until those years, up until really 128 of the Common Era, when the last of the Asar Rugi Malchus died, the people were waiting. They were waiting. They were waiting and seeing, when was this going to happen? People are going to die for this fucking, when is this going to happen? And in a period of time where things were terrible, there was a false Messiah in Bar Kokhba. Not only was the Beis HaMikdash completely destroyed, but the previous emperor who had agreed to making the foundations of the third Beis HaMikdash was taken down, killed. Another emperor got up and destroyed, was literally decimating the Jews when they needed their gedolim and the tzaddikim more than anything else. They were all killed. After a period where 24,000 Talmidim were lost to Rabbi Akiva in a plague, and there were no rabbis around, and all they had left were 5 Rabbeim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, and some say Rabbi Nathanael, and that's all that was left. At a period like this, this is when everybody was being killed. It was an unbelievable time, and that's when this happened. It made it into an even worse ghost. Imagine that for a second. I don't want you to imagine it, but it would be as if every Rebbe and every yeshiva that is around today would just pass away all at once. Chas v'shalom beyond chas v'shalom. That it would be terrible. And then, along with them, the 10 greatest rabbis who have ever existed of that time, all 10 of them would be gone as well. You can't imagine what kind of a tzara that was. And all because of the tzara of Malchus, all because they were mocheled. That's the Rebbeinu Bachai in this week's parsha. We're going to take something out from this, and it's going to be a little bit different from the lesson that you could learn from this. It's not going to be about mechila, how to be mochel your friend. It's not going to be about how you should ask for mechila from your friend. That's not where we're going. We're not going to punish Yosef or the Shvatim for what happened. This is what happened. This is the Rebbeinu Bachai's lesson, and now what do we take out of this in our daily lives? What can we do? There's an easy answer to that. Clear communication. The ability to say something to somebody, for him to understand what you're saying, and for him to be able to respond back. and to explain exactly where he's going and what he's doing. Quite often, huge fights, arguments that don't need to be there, even wars, stem from the fact that somebody miscommunicated with another person. Sometimes there's small little bits of miscommunication. I thought you were going to be home tonight. I didn't realize. And then there are major bits of miscommunication. Wait, I didn't tell you what flight number I was on. I forgot to tell you that I was going out of town for a few days. There's small, and then there's big. And each one of them are important to be able to go. Listen, it's devastating for a friendship. It can kill a friendship when there's miscommunication between one and the other. But it's devastating for a marriage. Devastating for a marriage when a person is not able to communicate properly what he means or what he's trying to say. For example, let's say, now I'm giving this as an example, I happen to like tilapia. I'm just going to tell you this right now, okay? Let's say a person comes home and his wife makes from a dinner of tilapia. Do you know what tilapia is? Type of fish? We're good. I could have get salmon, but I don't know anybody that doesn't like salmon, so we're going with tilapia. So the guy comes home, and he goes and he has a little bit of dinner, he takes a bite out of it, and he thinks this is the worst tasting fish I've ever had before in my life. Right? But he doesn't want to insult his wife. So what does he do? He says, oh, honey, this is the greatest fish of all time. Well, meanwhile, he's taking everything that he has and he's sticking it inside a napkin. Right? He's able to eat a little bit, but he's able to whatever. He sticks a lot of it inside the napkin itself. At the end of the meal, he says, wow, that was the most delicious dinner I've ever had before in my life. Now, what does his wife think? His wife thinks, wow, he really liked that dinner. He polished off his plate. Everything's gone. He had a really big napkin at the end of it, but it looked like it was all completely gone. So I better make this again next week. So the next week comes along. She makes coffee again. Exact same recipe. Guy looks at it and he's like, oh, man, I can't believe I have to do this again. But he does it. He's like, delicious. Absolutely delicious, right? Well, choking down everything that he has to have, right? Again, making a huge napkin. Third week, she does the exact same thing. It becomes a staple in their diet. And there's tilapia every week for 6 months straight. So finally, the guy sits there. He's not in such a great mood. He sits down after something that happened to you the other day. For sure, he just didn't get tozo. So when he sat down, after everything was said and done, he sits down, takes the bite, and he's like, I can't stand tilapia! His wife looks at him and is like, what in the world is wrong? I've never liked tilapia. Never liked this. It's the worst food ever. I can't stand this food. Let's think for a second. The guy is proud of himself. Why is he proud of himself? He's been able to hold it back for 6 months. He hasn't said anything for 6 months. If you ask him, he'd be like, listen, for 6 months I didn't say anything. I know my wife likes it. I didn't want to say anything, so I held back for 6 months. I couldn't take it anymore. On the wife's side, the wife has no idea what's going on. I have no clue that you didn't like tilapia. If you would have said something, then I would have been perfectly fine. I would have made something else. I would have made you white fish. Everything would have been fine. So why didn't you tell me that you didn't like tilapia? I didn't want to hurt your feelings. Well, now you did. So now you hurt my feelings. So is it better that you didn't hurt my feelings the first time? Is it better that you wait off until it happens at the end? So hold off on that example for a second. Here's something else. Guy comes up to me and he tells me he wants to start dating. So I said, not a problem. Okay. I don't know, but let's say, you know, let's figure it out. This is not based on a true story. I know half of you are already thinking that way. Maybe he's talking about me. It's not. So the guy says, I want to start dating. So I say, okay, that's a great idea. Let's sit down and we'll talk this week about what you can do to prepare yourself for getting married. And then he comes back to me 3 days later and says, I'm getting engaged tomorrow. What do you mean? When did you start dating? Well, I started dating 3 months ago. So why did you tell me? I want you to know so you weren't so surprised. That's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable. But that's a clear miscommunication. You're telling me that you're starting to date and that you haven't started dating yet, and yet nonetheless, you're telling me you're ready to get engaged. This is a completely different story. Number two. Now, number three. My wife went to a certain dinner that was made from, this is an actual true story. So my wife went to a certain dinner that was made by an organization in the city, perhaps an organization that I'm very close with, and she was sitting down. She was extremely upset at her seating. Why? Because she was sitting right in front of the band, and her ear was right next to a giant guitar, right, that was being played, electric guitar, of course, and right in front of the speaker. So she was very upset about it. She came home and she told me, I'm very upset about where they put me. Why are you very upset about where they put me? They put me right by the band. I was listening to it the whole time. I don't like this music. It was a loud guitar. It was klezmer. I hate klezmer. Right? It goes on and on and on and on. And if somebody calls me up and asks me how I liked the dinner, I'm going to tell them that I absolutely hated it and I can't stand it and I'm never going to go there ever again. Somebody calls her up the next day about something else entirely from that organization / institution and said, how do you like the dinner? She said, great. Great. Everything was fine. No problems. So what do you think is going to happen next year? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Why? She didn't communicate well what she wanted or what she was planning on what she had. That's terrible. There's nothing that can happen. On the other hand, in all these situations, there are some people that are the exact opposite way. Instead of miscommunicating, there are people out there that have no filter. And the people that have no filter are able to say things which are embarrassing for most normal human beings, but say things that just come up in their head and then excuse it as saying, well, it was just in my head. What did you want me to do? It just has to come out from my mouth. There are people that are exactly like that. And obviously, that's a terrible need on the other side. To not say something or to say something extremely badly that can be hurtful, both of those extremes can be terrible for absolutely anything. So what is it? What do we have to do in order to make sure that it's okay, that it's right in the middle? What is the proper communication? So let's bring this back to Yosef and Tzadik. What would have been the proper method for Yosef and Tzadik to succeed, for the Shvatim to be able to gain from this conversation with Yosef and Tzadik? Well, it's easy. Yosef and Tzadik, after Yaakov Avinu had passed away, should go up to the Shvatim and say, brothers, I have a problem. I have an issue. Halakhically speaking, I don't know what to do with this dinner. I don't know what to do. Should you come in and I'm going to have to treat you with respect? My father, I can treat you with respect along with my father. But now that it's you and I'm technically the king, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. I may be younger than you, but halakhically, I don't know what to do. So let's decide together, halakhically, what can we do together? The Shvatim would say to him exactly that. The Shvatim should have communicated well to Yosef Atzadik to say that, can you be mokolos for what we did to you and selling you? And Yosef Atzadik should say aloud, it's hard for me to be mokel you. Let me think about it and get back to you. Now, we're not blaming the Shvatim or Yosef Atzadik. Their reasoning and their ideas and what they had in their head are way beyond their understanding. But if we were in that situation, Chazal is telling us, if you're in that situation, that's what you should do. What the Shvatim did and what Yosef Atzadik did was beyond their level. We have no clue. They're mamish in Shemayim trying to figure out things that are way above anything that we can do. We're not blaming. This is not, that's not that. It's the lesson that the Torah is showing us based on this Rabbeinu Bachaya of what could have been done to improve this situation. And from that, you can now understand. You served something really bad. Really bad. In your taste buds. Your taste buds, in their mind. So what do you do? Now, if you tell your wife, this is the worst food I've ever had in my life, that's the worst idea ever. If you tell your wife, I love this, that's also the worst idea ever. So what do you do? Honey, I like tilapia. I don't love tilapia. I really don't love it. I would really prefer to have something different, like salmon or whitefish. You suggest something along with the I'm not so sure. And you don't do it at the beginning of the meal when she already made it. Once she made it, you'll deal with it. You deal with it as it is. After it's over, then you say, I really prefer it. Thank you so much for telling me. I appreciate you doing it in such a way where it's, number one, not insulting to me, says the wife. And number two, explaining to me what to do in the future about such a thing. If it's not done that way, then you can see exactly where failures happen, where miscommunications can lead into horrible types of devastating circumstances. To say to the person that you just went to their dinner last night, that was the worst dinner that I ever went to in my life, the most boring, terrible music, I sat in a bad seat, etc. That is the worst thing to say to a person. What do you say? So like, I'd like to sit down with you maybe in a month to discuss what I think would be great ideas to help improve and enhance the dinner for the future. That would be a better idea. Because when you just say, no, I think that was the worst thing ever, well, nobody's going to learn from that. Nobody's going to take anything from that. You have a roommate who isn't showering as often as he might, as you might like him to. Like, for example, once a day, and he holds once a month is good enough. Well, that might be. You might find somebody like that. Or he coast to coast, right? He goes coast to coast, and he gets up, and maybe there's a zayichah on a Friday afternoon for him to smell like a rose, and the rest of the time he smells like a dead plant from dead plants. So what happens when you have a roommate like that? To go up to him and say, "You stink, get a shower." That's not going to work. See, that's a miscommunication of epic proportions, because the guy's going to deny it, and maybe even will say, "I'll show you that I don't stink. I'm not going to take a shower for a month, and you'll see that I don't stink." He's going to spray himself with body spray every day, and it'll be like French. It will be terrible for everyone involved. Absolutely terrible involved. So what do you do? You have to say it in a different way. Not "you stink," but just like, "Tell me, I've noticed that you haven't needed the shower as much. Do you need a certain time that you would like the bathroom, that you would like to be there, that'll make it easier for everyone? Is there a better time for you, for me, something like that? Is there something that I can do or anybody else can do?" That's a better way of doing it. You need somebody else to handle it? That's, again, a little bit of a communication gap. Something. Just don't expect perfection when somebody else is doing the job for you. What can you do to make it a little bit better? I think most miscommunications come when there is some type of fear of either reprisal or revenge or some other little type of issue of, if I go to this person and I say this to that person, then he might get me back. One of the reasons why it's hard for me to deal with somebody in this yeshiva itself is because every time I mention something that might need a little bit of fixing or might need a little bit of help or something like that, I get shot right back with, "Well, why don't you do this? This needs help when it comes to that." And I don't necessarily want to go to that person with the issues that I have, because I know he's going to just shoot something right back at me. That also has to take work. Somebody comes up to you and mentions something about you. Are you going to go right back to that person and say, "Well, here's what's wrong with you"? You can accept it, take it, and say to yourself, "Okay, now, can I work on that? Can I make something better happen? Can I be a better person, etc.?" And then, at a later point in time, mention to that person who said something to me, "I was hurt by what you said, and here's why. Because I feel that you're lacking in X, Y, and Z." That's a better way of doing it. When there's more open communication, ability for people to speak to each other, things get a lot better. Friendships are saved. Friendships are made. And when it comes to marriage, you literally are saving your life. It's one thing to not say anything at all. It's another thing to say something badly. Get right in the middle. Say something in a way that you know is not going to be there. Now, you're going to have gaps, and there's going to be times when there's going to be anger or emotional distress or issues that are going to come up that are going to be a need for you to either be angry, etc. For example, to communicate to a child not to go across the street without looking when cars might be coming, to go up to the kid and say, "Oh, honey, don't do that again. Don't walk across the street," is not going to be as effective to the kid as screaming at him and saying, "Never cross the street like that again." There are times where you have to show angry face. Some of you who have slept in for chakras at some point may have seen angry face from me at one point in time or another. Hopefully, you have not seen my angry face, because I don't like using angry face. I like using happy face. I just don't get to use it very often. Perhaps you've seen me be able to use it. But there's a point as to when you can and when you can't use something. And when there's miscommunications, then things never work. If you tell me you're going to be somewhere at a certain time and you're not there, then obviously I'm upset because I expected you to be there at that time. Right? And if you're not there, what am I supposed to do? If you didn't tell me and say, like, "Oh, I thought you'd figure it out," that's a problem. Rabbi Friedman comes up to me this morning and says to me, "You didn't tell me about a certain thing." Yeah, that's a problem. I agree. That is a problem. There are always going to be times when you forget when things happen and it's there. The key is to realize that these things will happen and to admit you're wrong and to admit that it's your fault that you miscommunicated and work on it for next time. And you will. And you'll be great. And things will be good. Things will be perfectly fine. But like the tilapia, okay? Like the case of tilapia, you want to be careful. Especially with the following, okay? People have egos. When you bruise egos, they don't grow back as quick and fine as they once were. You ever chopped off the tail of a lizard? You ever done that? No, because you're not sick, right? Well, I have. So when you do, the lizard's tail grows back. By most lizards, not all of them. And I wouldn't suggest doing this just to random people and chopping off legs and seeing if the leg grows back. Usually they don't. But if you do, it does grow back. But it grows back in a different form. It's not as strong, it's not as colorful, and it doesn't look the same. It looks like a new grown tail on the lizard. You gotta remember that whenever you go up to somebody and complain or say something, whatever it is, there's a new tail that's growing. Be careful with that. Because a new tail, you never know where that's gonna go. Never know what that's going to be. So be careful with that. But otherwise, we should be able to figure out, and we should be able to be mitakin whatever is considered, whatever the Rabbeinu Bachaya considers the fate of the Shvatim. We should be able to be mitakin that fate by understanding how to communicate better with everybody. All right, everybody.